Hello and welcome to the Navy Blue Corner. I'm Ian and this week we are live here on the Blue Abroad YouTube channel. No pre-record this time round, so make sure you drop your thoughts and questions into the live chat. We'll be sure to have some great discussions throughout this episode. Now, unfortunately, you may notice Lockie will not be joining me today. Unfortunately, he's sort of quietly shuffled himself over to England and currently has no internet, which is absolutely perfect. We love that. Clearly, England don't know how the internet works in 2024, so it's very sad he's not here today, but there's always a silver lining to this. So joining me this week is a man who needs no introduction. He's the king of Carlton content, the man who graciously has allowed us to join you every Wednesday night on the Blue Abroad YouTube channel. It is, of course, Terry Degani. Terry, thanks for joining me.
Mate, massive shoes to fill. I'm nervous.
Well, it's nice to probably be a bit of a guest, although you've been doing the rounds today. You're absolutely incredible from yourself. So how are you feeling? Are you a little bit tired, or am I hopefully amping you up for tonight?
I'm excited. I've done, it's interesting because I've done reflections at six with Ari. So we've reflected in the past and then just did team selection with Pommy and Bucky and Paul. So we kind of looked ahead to round five and team selection, and now I'm coming back to round four. So, mate, you got to do what you got to do. The season's alive. This is what we want. We don't like off season when there's no footy. We want the footy, and here it is. So let's get on with it. You know,
absolutely. We absolutely never stop. So yes, the Blues have won yet again to remain undefeated in 2024. Finally broken our Adelaide Oval curse. It was a wild and crazy finish to an absolute slog of a contest. So much to talk about. So much to dissect in our win over the Dockers. I have a lot to say, but I want to hear from Terry. How did you feel after the game, and what was your probably biggest takeaway from the win?
Good question. Biggest takeaway was, I think, the belief. It's the belief that no matter what, we're going to find a way. We're starting to enter that period of time where there's so many lessons that we've learned through the mistakes and through the losses and the disappointment, and it's... I think for the first time, I'm starting to feel more consistently that they're paying us back.
Yeah.
Because the learnings are happening, and I thought we withstood a pretty well executed game plan for the Dockers. And I thought at the end of the four quarters that we hung in there for just a little bit longer than what they did, and that's how we got it done.
Yeah, no, it is such a different Carlton, and even this the difference between last year and this year has been immense. Like, we're not playing the best football. We're clearly not at 100% at the peak of our powers, but we're still doing enough. We're hanging in these games and still winning undefeated. It's absolutely amazing. So let's jump into the first segment. It's where we always start, Navy Noise, where we go through all the biggest talking points out of the game last week and anything that has come into the Blue Sphere for the week. And the big one that I sort of saw, one of the main narratives out of that game was that Carlton stole this one, that there was an absolute robbery towards Freo. And, you know, without getting too much into the whole umpiring, because I do want to cover that in detail just a little bit later, is that how you saw things play out? Did you think we were lucky to come away with the 4 points?
I think luck played a part, but I think you make your luck. And I think the game of footy is a magical one, and you can come to a game of footy and execute a game plan and slow it down and go wide and force your opponents to kick and play a measured game like the Dockers did. But the game requires you to be daring. It asks you to be daring. It asks you to take the game on. And if you refuse to do that, you may get punished later on down in the game. And I thought we did that. And yeah, so I think you make your own luck. I think there were a few unlucky calls against us early in the game. And, you know, by the end of the year, it all evens out anyway. So we take it.
Yeah, I definitely really tend to agree with you. I think as far as the luck thing, it's such an interesting narrative, and it's probably a really lazy one to come out of that game, because while I think Freo did so many things well, they completely nullified our attack. They stopped us playing the way that we wanted to play. We weren't able to move the ball fast. We weren't able to get that clearance ascendancy But really, even though Freo dominated the contest for, you know, a lot of that game, they didn't really create enough scores off that domination. So for me, it's, if you're playing this style of football where you're taking the strength of the opposition away, but you're not able to take advantage of that on the scoreboard, it's kind of like, what's the point? Like, what are you really trying to do with that style of football? And when you're looking at Carlton, when it's close and you give yourself a chance to win, that's where I'm saying it's not luck, because when you're hanging tough, doing enough just to, with the last final minutes being a kick in it, that's not lucky. Your teams don't do that in this day and age.
Yeah. I think it's also something that we're going to have to get used to. We were hunted. We were the hunted team this week. We're used to being the hunters, and there's a mindset shift. You know, we're a side that finished where we did last year, and that puts a target on your back. And, you know, the more we play in these type of long seasons and we go deep, the more that we're going to get these type of contests. So,
It was really interesting to see, I guess, how we kind of reacted to that. And on top of, I guess, talking about the luck aspect, you sort of touched on it to a degree as far as maybe some umpiring calls, but, you know, Fremantle, 6 of, I believe, their 9 goals came direct from free kicks. That's not saying that they were all horrific and none of them should have been paid. It's credit to Freo, because a lot of those were, you know, really close to goal, all off pressure, and really were there as far as the free kicks were concerned. But, you know, if we're a little bit more composed at times in our back six, it's not going to be that close. It felt like even though they had the ascendancy, dominated possession for a while, they weren't really creating those looks. It was almost a little bit more lucky for them that it was all from free kicks. And even the other way, it did seem as if we did miss a few chances in front of goal. Weirdly, we take a few of those when we are on top, and maybe it's a 4-goal win for us. It's so strange.
Isn't it funny that how the narrative has gone after this game? Like, we had more scoring shots.
Yeah.
We generated more scoring shots. I mean, we aren't even having this conversation if Akers kicks that snap in the fourth quarter, or if Carroll just composes himself a little bit more and kicks that throw. I think Cottrell had a really standard shot. I mean, to be fair, it was on his left early in the game. So, yeah, it's. I think this is something we need to maybe start getting used to. We have. I mean, I don't remember being the great Carlton in the 80s and 90s, but I imagine it was something like this, where teams just hate losing to you because they respect you more, you know?
I know. And so many people just have that natural bias, and that's a good thing. Like, we've never really experienced that. We probably haven't been good enough that it didn't matter. No one really cared about us enough because we weren't winning games. And now you're seeing it, and I thought there was another weird mainstream narrative out of this game where not only was it like, you know, Carlton was super lucky to win all of this, but then in the same breath, and I saw this on First Crack, which I thought was very strange. They had just finished this conversation of, gee, that umpiring decision doesn't go their way, Carlton lose this. And then it immediately turned to, well, Carlton are undefeated. I guess they're legit contenders now. And you're like, how can you have both of those in the same sentence if you're saying it's pure luck we win? But because we did win, now we're like flag favorite. So I think, well, I guess my question I wanted to ask was, what do you kind of make of that narrative, and how much of the result, regardless of the performance behind it, impacts how people see the game and draw conclusions from that?
I think Bev Tone has literally summed it up perfectly. The hate is amazing. It's better than the pity.
Oh, and 100%.
And I think that this is how it's going to be. There are going to be unfair comments made by opposition fans over the next period of time, media, personalities. Because, I mean, you remember last year, Carlton, they're a great contested possession side, but they don't have a turnover game. We get the turnover game. Oh, where's the mate?
Yeah.
This is why we exist. This is why we exist. So the challenge is to block it out and sort of figure out what's fact and what's not, you know?
No, I totally agree. And I think on that, trying to get your opinion on this, do you think that if the result didn't go our way, those last final minutes don't happen, we lose that game, would that have changed what you maybe took away from what you saw? just in the perspective case, because I guess that's how what was kind of framed a little bit by some of the journalists stating that, you know, we're lucky, but we win, so we're contenders. You finally get that first loss of the season with pretty much the same performance. Would that have changed anything?
I feel like, I mean, when Walters kicks that goal with 4 minutes 44 to go, in my mind, because of the way the game was going, pretty low scoring, I was sort of thinking, oh, maybe this is just one of those wake-up calls for the guys, because we weren't able to get the game on our terms for long enough. We seem to be playing the game on Freo's terms from how I watched it. So I probably would have been talking more around about, okay, we won three in a row. We got beaten. We clearly didn't play our best. We've got to get the game back on our terms for a bit longer throughout the games. And we, you know, got to respond this week against the Crows. But I guess, Ian, I guess we'll never know, mate.
No. What about you? I'm glad you. Oh, yeah. I was very similar. It was that last few moments, it was kind of telling myself, look, we're going to lose games this year. And probably in previous seasons, there was a lot more of a panic and frustration, like, oh, here's the one we lose. This is really annoying. Whereas I just had such more belief in this group and from what I've seen so far this year that, yeah, look, we haven't been amazing. We've been close in it for most of it, even though we haven't played our best. That's something to take, but we've just got to find ways that you get that little bit of growth where if you're not able to control things and get things going and play your best, get that fast movement going, if they're stifling everything that you're trying to achieve, then you have to react at some stage. You have to find a way to overcome that. But in the end, you kind of did. Those last few clearances was when we needed to really step up. There's maturity in that. And so it perfectly sort of segues into my next question and topic I wanted to talk about, which is the fact that we keep winning these close games, we find new ways to win. And off the back of this, do you think that we're starting to cause opposition teams a little bit of panic late in these games when the margin is quite tight?
Mate, I'm watching what used to happen to us flip. I feel like Freo, I've seen Carlton do what Freo did for a long time. I thought that was us because we went out hunting finals like sides or sides that we perceived to be top four, top six teams. And you know, we'd give it a crack, but just mentally couldn't get over the top. So I think winning like that gives them a lot of confidence that if they just stick together and stick to that collective belief, that the avenue to goal will come. And I think, I mean, you talk about the Jordan Boyd spoil on the wing. Faye Campbell gets the ball forward. You talk about the Zach Williams moment. Charlie, who had a pretty good battle with Draper all day, you know, takes that contested mark. And then all of a sudden, spirit back into the side. You've got to also remember the besties talked about it this week because it was gather round. You had Carlton representation, but you had pretty much four teams represented in the crowd for the most part, because you had Freo there, then you had the game afterwards, which happened straight away. So it was a weird dynamic in the crowd. So, you know, you don't have your full 19th man there. You get them this week again. You know, and I tried to articulate it on Monday, and maybe I said it wrong. It wasn't to say like, oh, we get away from this game and you can almost treat it like a loss because you're going to review a lot. And I didn't mean treat it like a loss because it was a win and they earned the win. But you learn so much from that game, more than what you do in like a 4-5 goal win, you know? So to do that with 4 points, tick.
No, it feels like it's a common topic of it's good to win and treat it in a loss as far as how you are reviewing it. You get to review it as a loss, but you took the 4 points. So it's so much more positive where here's, you know, 5-10 things that we need to improve on that weren't amazing, but it's not as depressing because you were able to still get the result in the end. And that was one of the big impressive parts that I am taking from this, another go of us somehow finding a way to win this close contest. This was another different way that we managed to do it. In previous years, how many times would you have seen Carlton in the last 5 minutes where we've not been the clear best team all day? They kick a goal that gets them back in front and we just drop off and that's it. We don't see that final comeback. We maybe lose by 2 or 3 goals and you go, oh, we were close, but that's it. Whereas this time whether we were able to get over them in those last 5 minutes or not, we just kept applying ourselves. And you look at that, you know, last quarter, up until then, up until three-quarter time, we'd kicked, what, 5 goals from a total of 37 inside 50s. We got 11 inside 50s in that last quarter and kicked 5 goals. That is just clear determination that we've never really seen from a Carlton side in recent memory. And then to go 8-2 tackles inside 50 in that last quarter just shows you how up for the fight we were, not only just getting the ball in there, but then trying to keep it in there, which has probably been that other aspect that we've really grown from in the last few years.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, we pick our spots. We've got the ability to trust when to pick our spots and, you know, not conserve your energy, but just understand it's a long game and that, you know, it comes your way and you've got to withstand and endure when it's not going your way. And the game always presents with you an opportunity to find some momentum, and whether or not you take it or not is up to you. And that's really why I think Freo, and that's what, I mean, I don't want to talk too much about them, but until they're able to start focusing on that and capitalizing on what they did at stoppage and putting it on the scoreboard, they're forever going to be stuck in that cycle. And that's coming from us who were there making excuses. Yeah. Like, you got to take accountability for what you didn't do as opposed to what somebody else did. And to let the game get decided by an umpire's call that late after dominating that much, bring it on yourself.
No, I could not agree more. And it goes to the other topic.
What was he brought up, Ian? I saw you this week. Mate, I could tell you had a bit to say, mate.
Mate, we are going to get there. We're going to get there. As soon as we get into this the media meltdown, I'm going to absolutely fire up, because the narratives that have come out of this game have just been insane from every single person that has allowed accreditation of an opinion in the media. And yeah, that's the really annoying thing out of this contest, particularly with Freo, is, look, they stifled us, and that's such a positive thing from them. They took away our strengths, but you can't be doing that in a game of football and be within a kick in the last 5 minutes. And I guess my next question off the back of that is, you know, looking at it a bit more our way, in they were able to stifle us, shut down areas of our game that we didn't necessarily want. Is it a concern that we never really overcame that we'd struggled to get that ascendancy for a long period of time? Like, we've obviously found other ways, and that's such a really positive thing. We still were able to get that turnover game going, but we never really got the game back on our terms, moved the ball fast through the corridor, got on top in the contested and the clearance game. How do you see coming up against a team like Freo? We might not be heaps of them, because not many teams try to just stifle you and go, we're not even going to try to win this game. We're just going to try to not lose as much as you. It's such a weird way about it.
Yeah, I think a few things. I want to see a bit more footy before I draw the conclusion that we've lost the stoppage game or things like that. I think what we're about to embark on is a new way in which we watch the team, and that is, how are they going to find a way to win this time around? Because I think we've been conditioned, you know, we've gone from losing and then like learning how to win and doing it one way only, you know, contest pressure, contested ball. And now we're starting to watch the aerial dominance take place. Like, not much has been made of the contested marks that we took in this game, and the aerial dominance that we had, both behind the ball and ahead of the ball. So I think there's a Sam Walsh-sized piece in the midfield that'll make it a little bit better. I think there's a bit of a mix in that half forward line / forward line that needs to improve. And probably will once we get some more players available. And then that'll in turn help with that mid-forward connection. And yeah, I think every week we're just going to find new ways to win. And that's what premiership teams do. They don't have one way of winning. They just find a way to win. So I'm mindful of drawing a conclusion just yet around, you know, where we're at right now or what Freo did and if it means anything. I'd like to see what happens this week. The week after, maybe another month of footy, and then sort of reassess where we're at. I'm not panicking just yet.
Oh, definitely no panic for me either. I find it really cool how we still are trying out so much, particularly in that sort of front half. We obviously don't have Walsh that you mentioned just yet. Fingers crossed, gets through training this week and we do see him. But how much this high half forward, small forwards, it feels like every single game it's, we'll try Durden this week and Fantasia. Then we'll, nope, now it's always this week. nothing super settled. And the forward line is, apart from Harry and Charlie, that's been the thing that has changed almost every single week for the last 2-3 years. We've never really settled on, this is clearly our best front six or seven. This is exactly how we want them to play. I wonder how much that sort of factors into that connection, being able to move the ball through things. And it's such a positive that we are able to find other avenues and generate from the back half, because in a game that they had, you know, 20 more uncontested possessions and, you know, won the total clearance count by 17. We had 3 more inside 50s, 1 more mark inside 50, ended up with 5 more scoring shots. That clearly shows you that even if things weren't amazing for us and completely went our way, the way we are trying to make things happen is clearly more effective and we're getting so much more out of it. And I even felt that early on in the game when they had quite a lot of possession, but then we were striking on the scoreboard. We were just really taking the moments and being a lot more clinical, which is, again, something I haven't really been able to say about this Carlton side. How have you seen that? And the big other discussions around the clearances, because everyone's saying this is a massive, massive concern because of what we built our game off in season 2023 and the success that brought. I guess, have you noticed much of a difference this season in the clearance game, and is it a cause for concern at all for you?
Not yet. Well, what I think I've seen is we've gone from a side that's playing TDK and Pitto most of the time to a side that's just playing TDK. So maybe some sort of connection issue with the way TDK, and also he's growing as a ruckman and becoming better. So he's getting to more contests. He's not as good of a tap ruckman as what Pitto is. I think that's where Pitto probably has TDK covered, but probably everything else TDK is a bit better, particularly around the ground and athletically, and maybe Pitto's a bit more physical. So I think that's an element of it. I think not having Walsh in there is probably an element of it. So I want to see what it looks like when he's in there, and you know, the first choice midfield's in there. If the best of the midfield is there with TDK and we're still seeing these types of numbers or this trend continue, then maybe we can revisit the question. But I think until then, it's hard to know. Also, I do think there is something to be said for this mental switch in the league of, we're no longer hunting. We're starting to become hunted. And I think that has something to do with it.
Now, that's a really interesting perspective. It's probably something I haven't tried to focus on a lot. So I'm really interested that, particularly, you know, this week coming up against Adelaide, we're going to go into depth on the matchup and what to expect. But, you know, they haven't won a game this season. They're going to be more hungry than ever with the blowtorch coming on them from the media quite a bit in the last couple of weeks, because they were meant to be this finals contender and things haven't started that well for them. And with us, you know, the complete flip side, haven't lost a game yet. Clearly, we haven't been in this position before, so it'll be interesting to see how much we have learned from it. It goes back to literally what you said at the top of this show, where the media all last season, Carlton can't win a flag because they're only winning off clearance. All their score is from stoppages. They don't know how to get it off turnover, so they can't win the flag, which I just think is such a bad narrative to have. I said it last year, where why are we just going off the one statistic that's worked in the previous years and saying that that's just going to work again, because no team that's won the grand final has only scored off this. Things can change. Clearly the game evolves. Maybe, you know, at that stage I was saying, maybe we're that team that has just figured out a different way and that's going to be the new formula going forward. So it is a little bit strange, I guess, to see us pivot a little bit this year. But then in saying that, we've seemingly sorted out this turnover game and now it's, oh, now Carlton can't do this right and now the clearance isn't there, so they're not going to win the flag. I just think that's absolutely insane, and clearly it's them just trying to find the negative in things not working without actually having a decent conversation around it. The only thing I've seen that actually excited me from any journalist this week, and I probably should have jotted down who it was, but it was an article referring to that us and Geelong at the moment are the 17th and 18th worst clearance differential sides so far this season, both undefeated, and both of us are number one and two in defending turnover. So that is just, as you know, once we have turned the ball over, we're not allowing scores off that. And that is just such a positive side of this. We're defending turnover. We're really good at going offensive off turnover. I'm sure the clearance thing will work its way out. And I'm hopeful that we don't focus too much on it where we start to lose other aspects of our game. And I think it's positive that it sounds as if that's the way Vossi is taking it as well. I guess, what do you make of hearing those kind of stats and how that might play into your thoughts around how important clearances are in the grand scheme of things?
I don't know. I think maybe we've just been conditioned to focusing on clearances in the midfield game because that's how we've, you know, scored some stoppages because that's what's worked for us for the last 18 months. Mm. You know, I find myself taking a lot more of a step back now and I think having a bit more trust in who's calling the shots. And I think as a fan base, we've been so broken for so long, you know, and it might take a little bit more time to get that full buy-in and full trust. Mm. But I just feel like we're in a really good spot. Mm. I feel like the decision makers are the right ones. And I feel like I've found this space to step back and let the season play out a little bit more. Because I think, I mean, who knows? We may go on a little bit of a slump like we did last year. Hopefully it's not, what was it, 7 of 8 games? Hopefully it's not like that.
Don't put that out there, Terry. You're killing me.
You know, but I'm just saying twists and turns are, you know, could come and might come. And, yeah, I just think it's important for us to not get too caught up in what worked in 2022 and 2023 because the game will move right past you. And so I like to see that we're being a little bit proactive, dare I say it, and getting on top of where the game is going as opposed to where the game has been, but also staying true to the fundamentals of the game.
Mm. And it's strange that, I mean, we were talking about last year that maybe this isn't a list that can actually play that fast turnover style. We've got these big lumbering, big contested inside mids. Maybe we just have to be this bullish side. So for not only Vossi and the coaches to kind of flip the script in the offseason and say, no, we're going to figure out ways to change the mechanisms and be able to do this, but we've shown we now can do it. So I agree. I think clearly we'll find a way to get back to that clearance way. And in our slump at the start of last season, we also were horrific at clearances as well. I felt like we weren't as effective at times. And then all of a sudden that changes in that Gold Coast game second quarter and we become one of the best teams in the competition on form. And even when I'm looking at this Freo game, the midfield was so fumbly around, particularly center clearances. We were getting the tap to our advantage and then just not being clean enough with it. Are we trying too hard? Are we a little bit too mindful of it? It's interesting, but I mean, give it time. Let's see how they react to it. It's insane that we're finally able to have these discussions on areas that aren't going well when we haven't lost a game. This is the best position to be in.
Correct. You take wins and lessons at the same time, and you don't get too drunk. You know, we don't get too drunk on the wins. Remember 2022? We're 3-0 and we are partying.
We're flying.
Mate, it was so because, you know, we were a fan base that was starved for so long. So I think now we've learned pretty quickly how long a season really is. And I mean, this week, Marvel, perfect conditions.
Yeah.
You get your home crowd. I'd be very surprised if the midfield was as fumbly this week.
Yeah, especially because it's probably been a bit more on focus. So it's going to be exciting. But look, this is one I need answered in the chat. So everyone, I'm going to need this on YouTube for you to drop it in the chat. If you're listening to this in podcast form, head over to the socials at Navy Blue Corner, tweet at us, send us a DM. Keen to know your thoughts. And Terry, I'm throwing it out to you as well here. Mm-hmm. Is Matty Cotterill our most clutch player that we have? Or is there another player that you can think of that, you know, if the ball lands in their hands when you need a set shot to win the game, you would rather have in their possession? Because honestly, right now, it is hard to put anything past him. Ice in the veins from Matty Cotterill once again.
Ice cold, wasn't he? Even his complexion, his demeanor during that kick, cool, calm and collected. And even his post-game comments. You know, like just talking about how hard he works and, you know, doesn't look pretty on the stat sheet. And then, you know, every now and again, you get your lick of the ice cream. And he really has this self-awareness of who he is and where he fits amongst the group. And I think that's partly because of him and partly because of the confidence that he gets from the coaching group. So, yeah, no, he's a gem when it comes to clutch. I don't know why, but I think McGovern is as well. Even though we haven't seen him as a forward much.
No, it's a good thing to have a few of these guys. I mean, Matty always was thrown out there as another one that doesn't seem to miss. And weirdly, I'm trusting Cripps so much more. Where, you know, two seasons ago, you're worried anytime he had a shot in front of goal. Feels like there's just so much more composure and maturity around these guys. And for a guy like Matty Cottrell, who, you know, is the more of that role player, not every single week is he going to have a ridiculously high number of possessions and be the standout star. He just needs to take those moments. And I was somewhat critical of him this season. I just thought he wasn't up to his standard as far as influence. And I love his energy. His work rate's amazing. But I always feel when he gets a little bit more involved, we're a better team. And so it was amazing to see he finally gets those chances this week and takes it. And one of the goals that he did kick that has really gone under the radar was that advantage free kick, where I don't think I've ever seen a player truly understand not only how to take advantage of the advantage rule by slowly just creeping forward while you've got the ball, waiting for the umpire to say advantage. And then as soon as you get it, realize you're miles ahead, basically just stop and just take a nice little set shot in while the game's going on. It's just that little bit of composure that I just love from Matty Cottrell. He's probably the one guy I want to kick the match-winning goal every single week for the celebration alone.
It's a good point. Not much has been made of his first goal. It was a high IQ play, wasn't it?
Yeah, which we don't normally have a lot of those, which is wild. But look, it's going to sort of wrap up a lot of what we have spoken about in the Freo game. Although I say that, I'm about to launch into an absolute rant about the whole umpire thing. But there was a bit of news this week that I'm keen to get Carlton supporters' thoughts on, because I haven't seen a lot. So I'm going to need you in the chat right now to give me your thoughts on this one. And those, again, listening at home, head over to at Navy Blue Corner and let me know. Will Hayward, the free agency interest. We're already early in the season, but we're talking about the offseason with some rumors flying around. We're one of many teams interested. Felt like they were about to list the whole AFL when his name came up. Sydney probably really in the pole position to re-sign him. They're playing good football. They're contending. Probably hard to move away from that while things are working for him. Us, Melbourne, Port, and Adelaide all interested. What do you make of him as a player? And is this a move that you would like to see happen at the end of the year?
Oh, it's a really hard one to answer after four rounds of footy. I guess what role does he play? Is he like a Matt Kennedy role? Like, what is he?
Yeah,
you know, like, that's where I'm just a little unsure.
He'd really kind of take over that role that's where we don't have currently due to, I guess, injuries in that third tall, that third medium marking forward that we want Silvani to be, we want Jack Martin to be. Probably not as much in the pressure way, but I feel like every single time I see him play, he's taking marks, he's taking pressure off the other key forwards, dragging players up the field. You can sometimes go in the ruck a little bit if you need him to as well. It feels like on paper, that's that one area I still think we miss, that third medium mobile forward that can kind of pinch hit in the ruck as well, take a bit of pressure off Harry as that second ruckman if needed. So, I mean, I like the interest because I really do rate him as a player. But it does also feel so weird to be talking about the offseason or this early while we're undefeated. It's normally the opposite. We're talking about it because we're rubbish.
Yeah. Yeah, let's just see how that one plays out. It is interesting to get that sort of information so early in the year and be linked to it.
It definitely is. So before we launch into the media meltdown, I tweeted it out and chucked it on the Instagram that there may be a bit of a special announcement in this episode. So this is quite exciting. Lockie, unfortunately, not joining me for this, but hopefully I do it justice, because those watching live on YouTube may notice something behind me that has kind of replaced the usual Carlton jumper that long-term viewers will see every single week hanging up on this cloth rack behind me. And that is because, with great pleasure, I will announce the newest installment of the Navy Blue Corner merchandise. Yes, we've got new t-shirts for the 2024 season. We've put a lot of time and effort into these things. Lovely embroidered as well. Trying to get that.
They're beautiful.
Let's do this live. I'll fumble around on StreamYard to try and get these photos up, but we'll chuck up a bit of a close-up on the t-shirt itself.
Wow.
Get lovely and embroidered on there. We've got the lovely white lettering and a bit of gold as well for a bit of a touch. I've always loved the history, how the white on the jumper turned into gold, basically. And I feel like it's a bit prestigious and we deserve that as a Carlton Football Club. So yes, these are the t-shirts. I'll chuck up a few more photos as well. These will be plastered all over the socials. And if you want to see a bit of a modeling shot from me and Lockie, have a look at that. That's what you're going to look like in those t-shirts. Absolutely beautiful. Wear them with anything you need. They're absolutely perfect. But those who are watching right now, they are available right now for you. I will find the link here and chuck it right in the chat. So if you want to purchase one of these, we wanted it to go straight to those who are the most passionate listeners of the podcast. So let me chuck this in the chat. There you go. There is the link. It's on our big cartel. If you need to go there anyway, it's pretty easy. Navybluecorner.bigcartel.com. The product will be on there to purchase. There's limited stock as always. Last time we did a merch run last season, they sold out pretty quick. So do not snooze on these, because I don't want to come sit back here next week and have someone say, look, I waited too long, I wasn't sure, now they've sold out. I'm not hearing that this time. And if you're listening in audio form, they've been out for a little bit, so hopefully there are still some available. But head over to the Big Cartel. Links will be in the show notes. Links are in the live chat as we speak. Grab yourself one. Grab one for your friends, your family, pets. We don't discriminate. But yes, new tees out now. Absolutely love it.
They are sick. I'm just going to pin that message to the live chat. So if you're watching this after it's been live, hit the live chat and we'll put in also in the description. Yeah.
And I mean, head over to all our socials at Navy Blue Corner. I'll be posting these to the point that you're going to get sick of it. So that's maybe another little bit of incentive for you to purchase them. I'll stop posting about them once they're sold out. So if you don't want to buy one and you're sick of me talking about it, buy one and I'll shut up. So those are the simple little arguments there. But let's head into the media meltdown. And the big controversy this week was obviously the dying moments of this game, the umpiring controversy that, look, I'm not sure if it's flooding in WA, but I'm pretty sure it could be from all the tears from Freo supporters and the media that have jumped onto this. It's been absolutely ridiculous, Terry. Now, this is the segment where we take the biggest, craziest, overreactionary sort of topic of the week and try to put some rationality into this. So before I launch into a massive tirade, which long-term listeners know I love to do, just keen to get your thoughts on those final couple of decisions and then really the fallout from this as well. What have you made of the umpiring controversy?
It's exhausting, to be honest. It's been, I don't know. What have I made of it? Was it touched? Yes, it was. Was the game over after Cottrell kicked his goal? No, it wasn't. Should Jordan Clark have been a little bit more in control of his emotions? Yes. So, yeah, it's been painful, as Bridget said. I mean, the Freo supporters I've spoken to as well, like, I mean, they are just the biggest bunch of that. Like, they want to be. I get it. They want to be great. I really do get it. They want to be part of like the contenders and they're just, they're so passionate. So, you know, I guess I wasn't so different and I am no different to them. I want my team to be one of the great teams as well. But I think the mayonnaise that it's gone to the point where you're starting to notice the mainstream stick up for us at times. Like, you know, it's bad. You know, it's bad when you've got, you know, a lot of these older heads saying like, no, you're playing from that. I don't know. I just find it painful.
Yeah. No, I mean, I just can't believe the fallout that's really, I get it. It's a big thing that it was definitely touched. Umpire didn't see it. How many of those happen? How many have happened to us? Like immediately my mind is drawn to so many occasions where was it touched? Was it not touched? You know, bloody what Peter Riccardi won in bloody like 2003 against Geelong at Marvel Stadium. Simon Wiggins touches it. You know, I'm still holding on to that, but I'm not posting about it on social media every day. The captain of my football club is not going on about it until the next game. We're focused on other things. I just cannot believe how long it kind of lasted in the media, and maybe it's stupid me going on about it from now, but it's just, it's wild to me that we're still having this simple conversation of, oh, there was one missed free kick, therefore game was robbed. When like I can be objective and go, okay, they missed an out on the full that Cripps should have gotten the first quarter, didn't go our way. Free kick against Gov that they got a goal off. Probably there was no contact. He spoiled the ball. That gives them an extra goal. The Kemp holding the ball, he was pretty stiff. Like I understand why they paid it because he dragged it in and it's on Kemp to get the ball out. But it was almost comical when he's literally throwing himself away from the ball going, I don't even have this thing touching me anymore. Like at what stage is that no longer my responsibility? That's another free kick given to them. Just before that, Kennedy's being held out of it. Like we can nitpick all day about calls that were there that weren't there. You play a brand of football that allows you to have one bad umpiring decision away from losing a game of football that you've so-called dominated and should have won this game because of it. Clearly, you shouldn't have won the game and you weren't that good in the first place. I cannot believe that the conversation hasn't gone towards Frio's thinking, how did we do so much in that game and we were a kick in front in the last 2 minutes? But it's not. They love to find the easy way out. I just think it's stupid. And probably the biggest thing that some of the little narratives out of this has just made my mind explode. This like, oh, around the descent free kick. Oh, the umpire should have had a feel for the game here, Terry. Come on, it's the dying moments of the contest. Why are we paying these stupid descent free kicks? Grow up. Stop being so soft. Like, can we actually have a sensible discussion about this? Because how many descent free kicks are paid in this day and age? Not many. Yeah. Not many anymore. Feels like we've grown past one little thing happening and they pay the decision. So maybe let's try and get a bit of context and throw out reasons why the umpire may have called this. Because the free kick isn't paid. 30 Frio players are going absolutely nuts at the umpire. Dies down. Kicks the goal. Then they blow up again. Then the umpire pays the decision. Clearly these guys were going off ridiculously. I can fathom in my mind that most likely the umpire, you know, he gets the carry on, they're upset about the decision, lets them have it. Then once, you know, once it's moved on, says, boys, enough, move on. One of them doesn't move on and he goes, that's it. I have to pay a free kick. I've given you a warning. Like those are the things that probably happened that no one's able to have this sensible discussion about.
Yeah. Does anyone really believe that Jordan Clark was talking to himself? And I think the fact that they're going and still continuing Ralphie. On with that. Yeah, I think, I don't know. Oh. You know what it is? It's a Frio problem. And until Frio address it, they're going to stay where they are. They won't improve. So
yeah.
I hope that they continue to complain about it because it just means that they'll never be able to break through that next layer.
Oh, it's insane. Yeah, the Jordan Clark narrative of he swears it himself, says his name, while eyeballing and facing the umpire. Okay, let's just say he did that. Then is it a reasonable thing? Like, it's not a reasonable thing for him to do in general, like say his own name. But then it was so long after the moment. Normally, if you're upset at yourself, it's like straight away. It's okay, yeah. The decision's happened, I'm angry. He kicked the goal. So I just don't get it. The media, like, it absolutely set me on Twitter when I saw John Ralph quoting, like, the head of footy at Frio saying, oh, he's confirmed it, that Jordan Clark said what he said. It's like, confirmed how? How did you confirm this? Did you just ask Jordan Clark? So I don't think that's a confirmation of what was actually said out there. And then you hear, you know, Schofield on his podcast with a very biased Brayshaw brother saying, oh, no, now they're paying the free kick on the field. which has never been verified by anyone. It feels like he can just say anything in the media these days, and we just start reporting it like it's fact. So I don't know. This Media Meltdown segment is about trying to find the stupid narratives that the media are saying and pick them apart and have a reasonable conversation about this. Because the other thing that sort of came out was, I think, you know, Joey Montagna has been big on this, is the need for more technology, more reviews, a captain's challenge. What do you make about us bringing way more VAR-style technology into this? Is that something that you want to see? Do you think it's just another overbearing, ridiculous overreaction? I kind of want to get your thoughts, because I feel like you are one of the more forward-thinking like content creators in how you see the game actually expanding and evolving. Do you think that the technology and the reviews is where we need to go?
No, I don't. I think what I've seen, and we spoke about this last night on Footy Abroad with Luke and Jake, because, you know, Luke brought this up, and Pommy, and I believe what we've seen with the arc so far is we have taken the decision away from the goal umpire, a human being, and into another human being who's sitting in a box somewhere watching with camera angles, and we've actually created more indecision than what we have decision. And I think we are going down a slippery slope if we think, I think we all fell for the theory that technology would come in and make every call correct. It's not. It's not going to happen. I don't think you can get 100% of the calls right 100% of the time. And I think if we can accept that, and if we can accept that we play a really weird game, or we watch a really weird game with an egg-shaped ball that bounces in really funny ways, then like there has to be room for human error, which maybe sounds great now because Carlton have just won by a couple of kicks and, you know, we got lucky. But it's the reality. I mean, the bounces don't go our way sometimes as well, and they won't go our way in the future as well. So I'm really cautious of captain's call, because already I'm already thinking about it. Even if you say you can only use it in the last 2 minutes of a game, it's going to be exploited. It's going to be used. It's going to be used to
slow the game down at a certain, literally.
You know, put some time into the tired bodies to get more recovery to set up. So I just think play the game on its merits, and let's encourage teams to be better before you get to within a kick. You know, I think if you had to ask me 5 years ago, I'd be down for it. And now, after having seen VAR around the world, other leagues, and having seen like the arc as well, I feel like I'm being duped into a, you know, crypto.com sponsorship, really, when I'm watching it. It's almost like they just want to get as many score reviews as they can out there.
Well, that's the weird conspiracy that always comes out in, do they have a specific amount of times they want that logo thrown on the scoreboard, which I've put my tinfoil hat on enough times on this podcast. I won't do it with that one, but it is like a weird thing that you're like, they probably do. Like, it would not shock me if that's the case. But I agree, particularly watching, you know, English soccer and how much VAR has not only just ruined the vibe of your team scores a goal and now you can't celebrate because you're just waiting for them to rule it off for something ridiculous. It baffles me that we're saying, bring the technology in, we want to challenge things, when there's times that we are reviewing the goals and we're going, the cameras are rubbish, you can't see anything. So we're going to still have the issue regardless, because the tech isn't there. And I don't know, the captain's challenge is strange because you've probably used it already and then this happens. Then what? Do we get two captain's challenges? Is it three? Is it four? I'm so in like lockstep with you as far as the keep things as human as possible. I would honestly rather, you know, the goal umpire doesn't really get the opportunity to send anything upstairs. The umpire doesn't get the chance to. It's just like whoever's in the arc reviews like the goal, gets to watch it themselves. And if they think that there's something that they definitely need to look at, they'll stop the play. Because that'll probably stop the goal umpire second guessing himself and being like, oh, I don't know, touched. Let's just see if that went through. And it's like the most obvious, no one touched that at all. What are you talking about? Then they make those decisions. And if we've got, hopefully, these people in the arc in this review system, it's the really obvious that hit the post and moved 5 meters. Let's look at that one rather than how the EPL has gone, where it's, oh, this guy's offside by this much. And you're like, come on, this is ridiculous that we're chalking off goals. And it's just, it ruins the game, really. Technology has not made it better in this sense. Works well in others, like a tennis where there's not as much going on. Here, not so much for me.
Yeah. Unless it's a robot that has its own mind that can tell you 100% of the time what's right and what's wrong, all you're doing is shifting the responsibility from one decision maker to another.
Yeah. No, very much agree. I want to hear your votes because we've changed this up a little bit this year. Normally everyone just does the 3-2-1. We've tried to do something a little bit different. Lockie's come up with a great system where basically the 3 votes goes to the best on ground, 2 votes goes to the player that went above and beyond expectation, and then the 1 vote goes to anyone you want for any single reason. Those in the chat right now, chuck down your 3-2-1s. Give a bit of a reasoning as well. I'm keen to hear why you've chosen to give those players the votes. If you're listening in podcast form, at Navy Blue Corner, send in your votes as well. But Terry, your 3-2-1 for this week.
Wiedering 3, Deconing 2, and I want to give some more love to Adam Saad for 1 vote because the man didn't eat a thing or drink a thing during this game. He was one of our better defenders on the day. Yesterday was the final day of Ramadan, so today is Eid. So Ramadan Saad comes to a close for season 2024. But I just have so much respect for what he does, whether he's doing Ramadan or not. But having understood a little bit more about what you do during Ramadan and then to play elite sport at the highest level and perform the way he does, it's remarkable. So there's a my three.
He's spectacular. It's like the not eating side of things. I can kind of get to an extent as far as like I'm still able to perform on the field. But when you go, it's like they're not drinking water either. I'm just baffled about how as an elite athlete, you're still able to get a decent level out, let alone it seems he becomes a superhero every single time Ramadan does happen. My vote's very similar. I gave my 3 to Jacob Wiedering. Him coming back in has just made us look even better. And it's not just what he does. It is this backline, and it's night and day what we saw in the first opening couple of rounds. And now with him down there, we don't win that game of football and are able to sort of quell Fremantle's ball movement if he's not there. 2, I was so close to giving it to Jordan Boyd because I'm so biased. I love that man anyway, and he was just amazing in big moments. But Matty Cottrell, really, because of how I saw him, I think the week before, he was in a position where another slowish performance, and I was probably asking for him to be dropped this week. So for him to then come out, play the way he did, ice in his veins, he gets the 2, and then, 1 for Saad for me. He was that real driver of we weren't moving the ball. We were struggling to move it with pace as well through the corridor. He was the one that was just absolutely slaughtering Freo and the real catalyst, I think, for our ball movement. Very stiff not to get the 3, but very interesting votes. And thanks for dropping them in the chat as well. I've loved reading these. There's so much love for Saad. Pretty much all the players that we named are the ones in the chat right now. So that is absolutely perfect. Let's go to some listener questions as well. The Grill the Corner, it's the hot seat style part of this. Now, this is interesting because normally Lockie puts me in the hot seat, and the rules are on this podcast, you're not allowed to fence it. So Terry, I'm going to throw some questions that we chucked out on Twitter and Instagram at Navy Blue Corner if you want to get in contact with us. And if you've got a question now, drop it in the chat. We'll try to answer as many as possible. But again, no fence sitting. I need a proper answer from you. We've got one here from Austin at Crips Fan who says, you can guarantee full health for one player on the list for the rest of the season. Who are you picking?
Oh, that's a great question. Wow. Great health for one player on the list.
No softball questions in this one. We go straight for the jugular and you have to give me an answer. I'll at least be able to have to give one back. I feel like Lockie normally doesn't do that. He puts me in the hot seat and keeps me there, which is very fair enough, to be honest. But I'll try and make it easy and throw a name out there. But you got to give me one first.
Okay. would have to be our most valuable player, and that is Jacob Wiedering.
Yeah. No, I'm the exact same. I think the drop, this is kind of mean to the other players, but I think the drop off from him to the next kind of depth option in not just ability, but all the other leadership marshalling the defense, it's a bigger drop off than probably any other position we have. Like halfbacks, we've got a fair few that can kind of step up to a degree. Midfielders, there's enough at the moment. We don't have Walsh. Others can take the mantelpiece. If one of the key forwards goes down, there's at least another one of them. Like there is a little bit there, but yeah, I think Wiedering is the one where we lose so much when he's not out there.
So true.
Another question we've got from Dom in the Den says, what's the most compelling player story to date this year? And he's thrown out a few options for you. You got Harry Mackay in the resurgence, Elijah Holland's start, Cripps, Williams coming back, Walsh's injury, another story. Which one has been the biggest part of your attention and why? It's another tough question. They don't make it easy for us. That's why we love the listener questions. They can kind of find that real pressure point, Steven Seagal-esque, that I don't think Lockie and I are able to.
Oh, God. I'm actually going to go with one that hasn't been listed there. I think the fact that Fantasia's playing regular football for this team is one that has come to me by surprise. I genuinely thought when he first got to the club, I'm like, we'll be lucky to get three games out of him. His body's just, you know, let's just calm down, not talk about him playing yet. Like he, you know, so I think the fact that we are talking about Fantasia now, like, does he start? Does he play as a sub? I think that's one that's going to grow more momentum as the season goes on. So I like that one.
No, I do really like that one. It's such an interesting thing. None of us ever expected him to probably be available round one, let alone every single game he's been in contention. And he's going to be so much better for this block and this run. We're really just scratching the surface with a player like him at the moment. I got to agree with the chat that says Harry Mackay in. There was so much chatter last season and we were worried if he was ever going to be able to slot those goals. And for him to have, look, he has his little traditional brain fade that he's going to have one every single game. We've been hot on that there's going to be one crazy Harry moment that you just got to laugh off really at this stage. He had the little, like, I don't know how that ball even got out of his hands running straight into goal. Like, you know, he holds that, kicks the goal. We win easy. Those are the little fine margins of things. But for him to really step up, he could win the Coleman this year. He's going to make it tough for Charlie. It's a massive, massive storyline. Next one is from, and he's in the chat as well. So we got one from Timmy Dub, who says, I think our stoppage and clearance is a bit of a concern. Now, we touched on this to a degree, but he's got the good question here of asking, what's the cure? How are we fixing the clearances? Pitto, is it him getting in there for the hitouts to advantage? Is it as simple as Walsh? If you were to get a 5% difference positive for us in the clearances this week, is there anything you're changing up to make that happen?
Oh, so the short-term answer is Sam Walsh, but the real answer is time. Just let time take its course and let it develop.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. That's my answer.
Yeah. I think it's interesting in the way of, I think clearances were really bad in the first half of the Brisbane game, bad in the Richmond game, bad in this game until the last like 5 minutes, but then it fixed itself in the second half of Brisbane, fixed itself in the North game. Like last week it was, we're back, midfield's firing again, and one slightly off game against one of the better midfields in the comp and we're worried. I think if we were not scoring from transition from turnover, I'd be incredibly worried that everything's going to shit. But yeah, I think Walsh will make a massive difference. His two-way running, his silkiness. We talked about the fumbles. He's not someone that does that. So yeah, I think you're getting at least 5% difference from him being in there. Absolutely can't wait. And then the last question I've got here was from Clint Bolton, who says, do you think they will keep rotating the small forwards as the sub? And is that a good idea, Terry?
I've liked it. It's kept them fresh and it's kept. I mean, we're leading the league for tackles inside 50. I don't know if that's got to do with the sub, but I think it's keeping that small forward slash forward pressure fresh. Always came on last week as the sub. He looked really dynamite and super in that fourth. So I don't mind it. I also have a feeling they're sort of competing for two spots or maybe three by season's end when Jack Martin's ready and available. Hopefully he is. I haven't minded it. I think there's more at play with it.
Yeah, it seems as if a lot of it has simply come down to there really hasn't been anyone else to choose from. Our injury list has just, there's always been a couple of players 1 to 2 weeks at the moment, and I always want a real attacking player. Like, I don't want to see a lockdown defender or a ruckman be the sub. I don't think anyone does. So at least in this aspect, we've been throwing out those small forwards. If a guy like Cunningham's available, that kind of style for me is the perfect sub, that kind of mid-forward hybrid. And it wouldn't surprise me if that's where we go when more players do become available. But I don't know, while there's that competition, I don't mind it in the sense of not only is it week to week that you're having to worry about your spot, in game you're worrying about your spot. If Fantasia's the sub or always is the sub, you've got to watch out. You've got, you know, two or three quarters to perform. If not, you're gone. So I think it is a nice little bit of competition for these guys.
Well, that's what happened the North game. I thought Owies was about to be subbed, and then he goes and kicks two or three in the quarter. And I'm like, okay. And then Durden ended up getting subbed. So it's a good point.
Change quickly.
Competition for spots in game. Yeah.
It could definitely change quickly. So let's go to the Blueprint to Victory, the last segment for the episode this week. And the Crows are winless so far this year. They're going to be fired up. They've clearly got a lot to prove. The media blowtorch has come for them in the last couple of weeks. Still got plenty of weapons to worry about. It's not going to be an easy walkthrough win. We haven't been 100% perfect either, but we've got results at least. I'm excited to see how we line up and how we perform this week. But most importantly, Terry, I want to know, what do you want to see this week? Obviously, it's the win. Take that out of it and chat. What do you want to see this week? 1 to 2 things that you would love to happen from this game.
Well, I want to see us use the ball a bit better. I want to see Sam Walsh back in that midfield mix, which I think will give us a spark. But I think I want to see us go back to, you know, using the corridor like what we saw against North Melbourne. Just work on our efficiency. Adelaide give up a lot of rebound 50s. That will happen for us this week. What we do with that is up to us. And yeah, I just want to inch closer every time I watch us play at this part of the year to what looks like our best. And I think the conditions are going to be great. They will be perfect. Quick deck. I don't think Adelaide are going to come and try and stifle us the way Freo did on a Marvel deck. I don't think you can do that for four quarters. So I respect that. I was surprised. I did my preview yesterday and I got a few comments from Adelaide supporters. They're off them. They're not happy with them. They're saying that, you know, they're one-dimensional in the midfield. And my view of the Crows is that they're just about to click. So I don't know what it looks like, what type of Adelaide we're going to get. I just see connection issues with the Crows that Carlton had not so long ago. So I think we'll get a good game, but I think because the game's in Melbourne, we should be better.
It feels oddly similar to how we kind of were at this age, kind of like last year, where midfield wasn't clicking. We've clearly got all these weapons. Now we're starting to say, look at all the, you know, draft picks that haven't been able to develop. Every single magnifying glass has been on what Adelaide are doing. Whereas, you know, when they absolutely pumped us last year at Gather Round, we were saying, why can't we look like Adelaide at the moment? What's happened in our development? It's insane how quickly things can turn. And, you know, Timmy Dubb has absolutely nailed it here, because this is what I wanted. I don't want to see Ben Keys dominate us again. I just can't have it. Like, this man, he's a decent footballer, but every time he plays us, he's just like prime Gary Ablett Jr., Sr., Chris Judd, Wayne Carey. He's like every single good player that's ever existed. So if we can keep him, you know, a goal or under, limited influence on the contest. That's my big. I just don't want to be haunted by that man and his slick haircut one more time. And then the other one is, I think without Fogarty being in there at this stage, I really want to make sure that we've still got that same tackle presence and similar numbers in our forward 50. Such a big driver for that. With him out there, it'll be interesting to see how we do replace him. So I want to make sure that we are still up and about with our tackles, because it's a big part of how we play our football.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, on the Fogarty part, team changes, because he had the one match ban, which was interesting. I reckon it's fair. He a little bit reckless as soon as you lift the arm. I know he's spoiling. It's a football act, but there was a chance he could have knocked Fife out with it being just a little bit time delayed. And then to make matters better or worse, it's the fracture of the wrist for Fogarty. So we've just decided it's not even worth it. He's going to miss a few games of football anyway. Elijah Hollins is a test. Walsh is a test if he gets through. Marchbank probably another week off. What are your changes for this week? And drop them in the chat. I want to know what your team selection will be. Who comes in? Who comes out? And at Navy Blue Corner on the socials, again, if you're listening to this in our podcast form, I want to know what everyone is thinking, because I have struggled to be finalized with my changes.
So Fogarty will come out, obviously. Elijah was sore. I feel like it's a week for Elijah, if anything. So if those are the two that are coming out, what I would be doing is I would be bringing in Sam Walsh, and I went left field. I brought in Chincotta. I put Fantasia as the sub, and I have Chincotta playing Fogarty's role.
Interesting. Take me through, I guess, your thoughts around he hasn't necessarily, I guess, we haven't seen him play that role before. What are you liking about Chincotta in that kind of pressure forward? More moving up the ground, maybe getting a little bit of midfield time as well.
Yeah, there's a few elements to this. Number one, we don't get much on the always is elevated, and Fantasia becomes the sub. Wait, does that work?
Yes. Yeah, I think that works.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll let it track.
Yeah. sorry. So Fogarty's not too much of a factor on the scoreboard. He's got midfield ability, which I think Chincotta does. And I think to have a defensively minded guy in that forward line, which doesn't mean that the other small forwards have to change the way that they play and they can do what they usually do, is important. I think what Fogarty does at ground level is at a high level. His ground ball gets are at a high level. I think Chincotta has that same trait. I think Jordan Boyd's pretty much locked himself in the back line. I don't see Chincotta playing in the back line right now in this team. And I think anytime Jordan Dawson floats behind the ball, I would like to see Chincotta always near him, because that's a guy that can carve us up by foot. So it's a bit left field, but I think this will be a way in which Chincotta can reinvent himself a bit.
Yeah, well, I sort of threw out the other week that after watching that VFL game, he felt when he went into the midfield, I don't know if it's just the bald-shaved head and the way he moves, but it reminded me of, like, is he going to be the Doc 2.0 now that Doherty's out, where he's this, started on the halfback, you kind of just put him anywhere you need to, can play a bit on the wing, hard running in the midfield, maybe a bit of high half forward. I'm excited to see how he experiment with a guy like him, because he's just so consistent in the way he goes about it, his preparation, what you see on the field. And I absolutely love him. And he has an eye for goal. So I don't mind this potential, you know, unrewarded high half forward role, because he'll dob one in from 70 on the run if you need him to. And he'll give you a bit of a celebration, which I think always hypes up the crowd. So I don't mind that shout. I think my changes at the moment, I had similar to you in that always comes in, Fantasia goes out. I don't even have him as the sub, unfortunately. Walsh comes in, and then I've moved Carroll to the sub. Probably a little bit stiff. I thought he'd kind of dropped off a little bit in the last couple of games, and his influence wasn't as good. And it's almost more I love what he could bring as the sub more than what he could bring starting compared to what else I could have as the sub with the injuries, which is maybe a really weird way to describe that. But I always like a more pacey midfield type player to come in rather than like a straight small forward. So that's what I've thought. And with my other strange option, I've obviously Fogarty comes out. I'm giving Ashton Moyer his debut because I still don't love that lack of third tall, third medium-sized marking target in the forward line. Seemed in that Fremantle contest, we were crying out for it at stages when we just needed someone else in that forward line to take a mark to be an option. So I kind of want to see what a guy like Moyer can do. And with Carroll moving out, it allows maybe a Kennedy to get a few midfield minutes as well. Does that unlock a little bit more with the clearances that we maybe need a little bit of an uptick in? So it was kind of me moving things around a little bit in that sense. However, if that's saying Elijah Hollins is fit and ready to go. If he's not, simple change. Carroll comes in, Chincotta becomes my sub.
I like it.
Yeah, it's not too bad. But yeah, let me know in the comments all your changes. Let us know. If you're watching this after the fact, drop me in the YouTube comments. Always keen to read those after the fact. And then the last sort of thing I want to touch on is looking at a bit more of the opposition and potentially things we can improve on. What do we need to overcome, Terry, to that will lead us to a victory over the Crows this week?
Oh, their pressure. I mean, there's no doubt. There's no doubt they're going to be hungrier. I mean, the more they lose, the closer they are to their first win. I think most, if not all of us, had them in our eight when we predicted the eight for this year. So I think there will be a period of time where the Crows are at us. And I think what we do in that time and our ability to withstand that and mitigate that will determine whether we win or not and how much we win by.
Mm. No, I do really like that. They've got some threats and I think they've got a really combative midfield. It hasn't worked amazingly at the moment, but they've won, you know, clearances in all but one game this year. And the one they lost clearances by one to Gold Coast. So it's quite strange that they're really high in contested, you know, possessions as well. They're only losing to Freo. And then I think they lost to Melbourne by about two contested possessions. So they're winning a lot of the ball and winning it at the source, but they're just not able to do anything past that. They're not scoring from clearances. They're not being effective in that sense. So it'll be an interesting matchup because that's the area we haven't been able to get on top of in winning it first. So I feel like that's going to be that big battle that if we can get our midfield sorted and take things away pretty quickly, if they're not effective already when they do win it, they're definitely not going to apply too much scoreline pressure. And the other thing that was an interesting stat that David King threw out there was around Taylor Walker and their forward line. When he kicks two goals or less in a game, the Crows win 15% of games. That's in the last 5 years. When he kicks two or less, 15% win rate. If he kicks three or more, 66%. So clearly a guy like Tex Walker is so crucial to how they play. And if they're getting the ball to him and he's getting enough looks in front of goal, means they're playing good football and things aren't going our way. So I think stopping him and our defense getting on top is another avenue that statistically speaking, we should get the chocolates in the end.
Wow, that's a nice stat. I like that.
Do you have any... yeah, sorry?
I was going to say I have faith in Wiedering doing a job there and keeping him to two or less. So,
yes, definitely me too. Is there any other things or obstacles you think we need to overcome to get the win this Saturday?
Jordan Dawson's precision kicking because he can open this up. Yeah, he can open up the ground.
Got a few like that.
Yeah, no, he has a really nice record against us. So, yeah, don't let Fogarty become Wayne Carey and don't let Jordan Dawson carve up Marvel Stadium. Yeah.
No, I like it. My last one was really, again, looking at some of their kind of mid-sized, smaller forwards that have hurt us historically. You look at Keys, you know, Rankin's got skills. Rochelle can turn it on, who's been down so far this year. They're those smaller mobile types that in previous years have caused us some troubles. I back us in as well. I think that our defenders, you know, Newman, Boyd and the start as well, the way we've been setting up as of late, we've seemed to be able to stop that and stifle the small forwards, where historically it feels like the teams that have the run in their forward line has been our kryptonite. So I'm hoping that we have truly overcome that and that that has been the big thing that will stop them getting the victory. But is there anything else that you wanted to touch on before we wrap up at all? It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast today and stepping in for Lockie, who, unfortunately, the internet's not working in the whole country of England at this stage.
That's all right. That's why we're here. We're a team. So we, next man up mentality. We get the job done. If you're not going, return your ticket via the app so somebody else can buy it. Don't forget to do that. It's a Carlton home game. So I think if someone buys your ticket, you get a credit towards next year's membership. So if you're not going to go this week, return your ticket via the app and let someone else buy it.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love this initiative that we sort of started this year. It allows Carlton supporters to give their ticket to other Carlton supporters. It's always a gripe of mine sitting in the members section and there's a Adelaide supporter surrounding me and I'm like, what is going on? Why is there Adelaide supporters? Who's given their tickets away to someone else? So yeah, we want those seats filled, as Maz has said in the comments right there. Get the home crowd going. It's been a while since we've seen home footy, so I'm absolutely keen. It's Marvel. We always create a big buzz in that stadium. It's going to be a big one. The Blues are undefeated. How good is this? Let's keep it rolling. And the last thing I will say as well, also, if you're here and you haven't subscribed to Blue Abroad, what are you doing? Tez does amazing work. There's so much content every single day. So make sure you do that and hit the like right here. But I'll leave you on this again. We've got the new merch. It's out there available. Links will be in the description, in the show notes, all over social media. Head over to our Beer Cartel and pick yourself up one of these fine little t-shirts before they sell out. Again, I'm not going to be able to hear the whinging when we sell out and you're like begging me for a t-shirt. Grab them while you can. But that is going to wrap it up. Very keen to see us back here next week with hopefully some functioning internet for Lockie. But thank you, Tez, for joining us. Up the bloody baggers.
Up the baggers. Go Blues.